You are listening to Valor Voices, a production of the Valor Officer Safety and Wellness Program. The Valor Program is funded through grants from the Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice. The points of view and opinions expressed in this podcast are those of the podcast authors and do not necessarily represent the official positions or policies of the U.S. Department of Justice. Here's your host.
Hi, I'm John Bouffalette. I'm a lead instructor with the Valor Officer Safety and Wellness Program and host for this edition of Valor Voices Podcast. This edition is part of our Foundational Concept Series, where we explore how Valor foundational topics can be applied in different situations. Joining me today is Floyd Wiley. Floyd is a retired lieutenant from the Newcastle County, Delaware Police Department. He is also a lead instructor and an on-site facilitator with the Valor program like myself. Floyd, how are we doing today?
Doing great, John. How are you doing?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining me today. I want to talk about something that's very important to me, and that's the concept of leading by example and how it's important that our leaders, especially our frontline and mid-level leaders, remain calm and focused in any type of storm. And I think that's more important today than ever before. So let's start. Let's have a great conversation and real conversation what we mean by leading by example.
When we talk about leaders, I think the biggest thing that we need to know as leaders, and I think it's extremely important, especially in a mid-level and leadership, as well as your exec level, command staff level. But I think one of the biggest things that we have to make sure that we do, in the military, they call it be no do.
Okay.
And when you talk about it, we're talking about you need to, number one, you yourself need to be a professional.
Okay.
You have to have respect. You have to be transparent and be trustworthy and exhibit, you know, excellence. When we talk about knowing, you've got to have those interpersonal skills, those conceptual skills. When dealing with people, you need to have your technical skills and your tactical skills. So you actually have to know what you're expecting everyone else to do. And then B, you've got to be able to influence people. You've got to influence them to make sure we carry out the mission. And we want to align those things up with the needs and wants of our subordinates and the officers that work for the organization. And we also want to make sure that we improve that organization. So that's the crux of the very beginning start line for leaderships, in my opinion.
What we're talking about here is that setting that positive example, right? That's what we're trying to do.
Right.
That encourages that desired behavior in the people that work for you. So that positive example has positive results, correct?
Yes.
So when we talk about this, so if you want your team to look professional, then you need to dress professional as a leader, right?
That's correct.
If you want your team to be punctual, then you should be arriving on time as well, correct?
You need to model the
way. If you want to be honest, then you must be truthful. This is what we're talking about, right?
That's correct. And the key is that, you know, it's through motivation. You've got to motivate them. You know, you have to be able to inspire your subordinates to aspire to be professional on a day-to-day basis. And that is from you modeling the way.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that you talked about too, which I really like, and something I practiced my entire career, the traits of leaders or great leaders that I tried to emulate was the ability to be decisive, to show that I had solid judgment, to use tact, and have the integrity that carries the day. And I want to make sure that we kind of break down all those things as we move forward. But I think it's real important too. And I think for this podcast, I think everybody listening who's a midline supervisor needs to take a self-assessment. Don't you agree?
Yes. I think also we need to get over ourselves.
That's a good point.
We really got to get over ourselves.
Leave the ego at the door, right?
Right. Just check it in. Leave it in the car. You know, leave the window down so get some air, feed it some water, whatever you got to do. Get over yourself, okay? Because it's not about you. It's about taking care of your people.
I always said some of my best learning examples I've ever had in how to supervise is the supervisor I work for, who I would say I would never do that. There's a lot of modeling that I had that was done by negative behavior that I said I would never do. One of the things I think about with leadership too, Floyd, is the Oz principle and how that matters. Can you explain that and what we're talking about? Because you and I talk about this all the time.
Okay, well, you know, the Oz principle pretty much talks about steps to accountability. Are we accountable? And a lot of times we think about accountability in a negative way, but are we accountable every single day? And for that matter, in every facet of your life, are you accountable? And what the Oz principle really lays out is four specific components, which are the positive side of it is when you see it, own it, solve it, and do it. So as a supervisor, you need to be aware and look not only for the issues that are deficient, but also for issues that are going the right way that we want to enhance. So when we see something, you need to call it out. And if it's something, especially on a safety issue, and that's primarily what we're talking here, you see something, you need to go ahead and address that. So how do we do that? We want to own it. So if it's an officer that we end up going to assist them and they're not handcuffing properly or they're not searching properly, or you're seeing this across your squad when you go out, do you own that issue that your squad needs some additional training? Do you come up with a solution to solve it? By maybe roll call training, whether it's hands-on, remediation, whatever the case is, and then actually do it. So that's what we talk about is seeing something, owning it, solving it, and doing it. It's a lot of times it's not things that are very tasty to us. And those are things that are like, this is going to cause me to put some time in on it. But that's what true leaders do. They are accountable.
And then
they don't place blame.
Yeah, and it's interesting too, because with that specific point, one of the things that we talk about with law enforcement, it's just such a high stress environment, right? That we know it's such a high stress environment, that we encounter things that, that as you have always said, nightmares are made of. And I've always found that I'm able to deal better with those stressors if the leader, my sergeant or my lieutenant, has confidence and a really good, solid decisiveness, who's open to make decisions and who shows tact and has a level of integrity. That reduces my stress in high stresses in situations. Do you agree with that?
We've taken anecdotal polls out in the field that one of the number one issues and stressors in law enforcement is their leadership.
Yes.
And that really stresses people out when you have a supervisor that maybe you don't even want to have come on scene because of anything else, that they're not competent. Mm-hmm. And what they're asking you to do. I have to say I was fortunate enough to have those good supervisors that I was able to emulate, but it also was a challenge for me to emulate them because they operated at such a reverent level.
Yes.
So one of the key things, though, is when they came to a scene, I felt confident because I knew that they had officer safety in mind, number one. Then we dealt with everything else, and then they protected me in terms of how I wrote my reports and how we dealt with cases and all those things that could get you in legal trouble.
To control the chaos.
So that's the importance of being a competent
controlling that chaos, and that by controlling that chaos, that reduces the stress, and by reducing the stress, that has a big impact on our overall health and wellness, and I think that's important.
Right, and a supervisor that shows up on the scene, like you said, has a positive mental attitude. They're always stressing excellence, but on top of that, they're very calm and able to calm things down and despite what chaos might be taking place, but they're able to make sure that once that takes place, it's kind of addictive to the rest of the group that's around. Once they can see that the supervisor's calm, we can control this, then it just permeates the rest of the event that you're on and the officers that are on the scene.
Yeah, and I think what you're talking about is leadership is action, right?
Right.
And that's important.
Absolutely.
Leadership is
action. You've got to take action. You got to do it. I mean, if you see it, you own it, and you solve it, but you don't do anything about it, it doesn't go anywhere.
Yeah, and that goes back to the old concept, right? Want to kill morale? It's that leader who says, do as I say, not as I do, right?
Lead by example.
Yep.
Lead from the front, you know? I'm not going to ask you to do anything that I would not do.
And that's one of the things I've always, in my own little role that I operated in, I had the concept of get dirty. In other words, I have no problem getting dirty, like leading from the front in the battle. And I think that's the thing that more supervisors have to do. I'm not concerned about getting dirty. I want to be there when my people need me.
Right. And again, from a supervisor's standpoint, yes, do we have to coordinate the forces or the troops when they're in the field, mm-hmm. and not to be necessarily that hands-on person all the time. Yes, although we like to get involved to assist, but at the same time, when your subordinates know that you're competent enough to do it, yes. and you have raised them to that level, that means everything.
It does mean everything. And again, we're talking about how a competent supervisor who leads by example reduces stressors. And again, we've talked about this on so many different levels, Floyd. The need to reduce the level of stress that occurs in the job. There is some that's baked in the cake we can't do anything about, but this is one that we can, correct?
That's right. And that, we can definitely do that.
Yeah, we can definitely do that. And that's up to the mid-level supervisor for this discussion. So again, it goes back to that question. I need everybody to ask themselves, what kind of supervisor are you? You know, what kind of supervisor are you? And do you practice the Oz principle? The other thing that we always talk about, Floyd, you and I are big fans of John Maxwell.
Right.
Why don't we have a little bit of discussion about John Maxwell and his concept of leadership?
Well, I'll tell you for all of you that are listening, I really hope that when you get off this podcast that you go and do some research. I'm going to give you a real thumbnail sketch on this because it will change how you think about leadership and you yourself as a leader. He talks about five levels. And when mm-hmm. we talk about that, the very first level is the one when you get your stripes, when you first become a supervisor of people. And, you know, people kind of follow you at that point because you have that legitimate the power.
Those three stripes. I'm in charge.
Right, right.
Yep.
That's it, and that's all you have. Yep. And you show up, and you know that look when you first walk in the day after you got promoted, and everybody looks at you like, oh,
all confidence,
right? Yep. You haven't been through, in most cases, leadership training, yep. and you haven't had an opportunity to exercise some of the skill sets that come with some of these this training. Yep. So what happens is you want to move to the level of relationships, and we talked about that earlier. So when you know your people. When you know their quirks, when you know their idiosyncrasies, how they work, what's their training, and so forth. Once you develop those relationships and they feel as though you're transparent, that's when they give you permission to lead.
And that is such a big piece, Floyd. I think that, yeah.
Right. We're not talking managing. Yeah. We're talking about permission to lead, where people will follow you anywhere mm-hmm. you go into any kind of circumstance.
I agree.
Then where you want to get to is you want to eventually move from that level to the area of production. Mm-hmm. That's when you start to get results. That's when you start having people who really invest. You have your subordinates. They want to invest into the process, invest into the agency, invest into themselves. And they are then showing that they are empowered. They're bringing new ideas and helping the team progress.
And that's a big word to use right there, team. You're developing a team.
Exactly, and that's where the production starts to jump in. Now, some people try to jump from becoming a supervisor right to results and production. Hey, listen, if you don't have those relationships, the machine's going to break down. You need to have those relationships. So they need to give you that permission to lead them. After that production phase, then that's when we start to move to the people development and a reproduction. That's when you reproduce yourself. That's when we start to look at succession, mm-hmm. okay, and building other leaders that can now start to lead. And that's extremely important in any organization, and I'm sure you would agree with that.
You have to develop the future. You're not going to be here forever. Right. So you have to start professional development, developing people who are actually going to be your replacement. And that's hard for some people to understand, but that's your role.
Right. And even if they are not formal leaders, I mean, just think about that. If you go out with a squad of 10, 12, whatever size your agency mm-hmm. is, if you've got a full squad of 40 that's out there and they are all leaders, okay, formal and informal leaders, I mean, how powerful is that? Yeah. And then the last level, which is very hard, is the pinnacle level, which is the level where you develop leaders that develop other leaders. Yeah. Now, here's the thing, though, and here's the trick to this whole thing. Is that you can be at the level four of developing people and you get a new person that comes to your squad, guess where you are?
Number one.
With that person, you're back at the position that they recognize you're the lieutenant and I've got to listen to what the lieutenant is. So at any time, you might be operating with different people within your organization on multiple levels, and you as a leader have to understand that, realize it, and be able to communicate with people conceptually and interpersonal through interpersonal skills in that manner.
And I agree. And I suggest, excuse me, that everybody goes out and gets a hold of John Maxwell's book and looks at those five levels of leadership, because I think it's important. Again, we're talking about reducing stress. And in order to reduce stress, and especially in critical situations, you have to be able to walk the walk and talk the talk, right?
Exactly. People are looking for guidance. They're looking for leadership.
Yeah.
You know, they're really looking for someone who they can communicate with, someone that is transparent, someone who's telling them the facts, and is also ultimately looking out for their safety, for, like you said, from that 30,000-foot view.
Yep, and it's up to the supervisor to step into the fray. That's their job. They have to show their integrity. They have to show their honesty. They have to be courageous. They can't be afraid to walk into the fire. They're not afraid of taking a calculated risk. They're able to make difficult decisions. And yeah, it goes back to the word, one of my favorite words when it comes to everything we do in Valor, is intentional.
Yes.
So
yes.
Leadership has to be an intentional process, correct?
Right. And listen, I was obsessed with being a leader because that meant that I had to continue to learn. And then I had to learn about myself.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that, you know, when you have to start taking responsibility for the good things and for the bad things, you have to do a self-assessment as a leader. When things go wrong, you need to find out, why did that go? What could I have done better? You know, and a lot of times there's things we just can't avoid, but that's the posture and mindset of a leader, and I've learned it from some of the best, and you're always continuously learning. I'm still learning how to be a leader.
And how to create solutions. How to create solutions that don't dwell on the problems. So we have too many people out there that dwell on problems. A true leader creates solutions.
That's correct. And it may not be perfect, John, but we come up with a good plan.
Yeah, that's it. And that's the bottom line. And the other thing, too, with this, Floyd, is, and I'll ask people who go to our website to look at some videos that we have there. One of them, like that, it's one of your areas of expertise, is the scholar statesman protector and how that impacts on what we're doing. Can you give a little short version of how that impacts you as a mid-level leader?
You know, as a mid-level leader, when we start to talk about it, it's you need to know your material. You need to know your directives, your policy. You need to know case law. You know, people who are professionals know that stuff. People who are amateurs have to go look it up.
Yep.
And you as a leader need to be able to demonstrate that you're a scholar, that you know the procedures, and that you're able to espouse that to your subordinates. The second portion of that is being a statesman. That's meaning that you have to have strong interpersonal communication skills to be able to talk to people. And I say sometimes, and I got this from my father-in-law, be able to talk to people from Yale to jail.
Yeah, I've used that myself,
You've got to do that and have that and develop that ally equity with your community. And not only your community, but also within your organization. Yep. You need to have the external legitimacy and internal legitimacy. And that's obtained by being a statesman. And then the last portion is being that protector. You need to know the tactical skills. You need to have technical skills with all of your equipment. Mm-hmm. When you're able to show your subordinates, the people that work for you, that you are a scholar in the area of law enforcement, you are a statesman, and you are a protector, that gives them the framework and an understanding of what level of accountability they need to have when they're out working and doing their duties as well.
Yep. And then when it comes to the midline supervisor too, I just want everybody to understand, we know that there's things that they can do and they cannot do within an organization, but they all have a specific span of control, right?
Right.
And we want them to focus on that span of control. Maybe that will ultimately lead to an organizational paradigm shift. But at the end of the day, there are people within their span of control, and we want them to make sure that they are leading those people, right?
Exactly. And John, you and I have gone out to places where they said, well, my staff this, my staff that, and they complain.
Yep.
Listen, I tell them, sorry about your luck. Your job is to take care of the people in your span of control. That's your job, is to get them home. And hopefully, by you doing that, by you being accountable, you will set the tone, create a tipping point, and that will create an organization of safety and mid-level leadership excellence.
And like I always used to tell myself, I had to be persistent. Persistence with me is either you're power through it, over it, or under it. But at the end of the day, you got to solve it, right?
Yeah, and listen, it's lonely. It's a lonely position, you know. And I'm not only saying it when it comes to dealing with subordinates, but within your organization, if you are not getting the positive feedback, I've been in that lonely position.
Yep.
And that's what you signed up for, you know. If you want to be a leader, you know, you may have said, hey, look, I want to be a sergeant. I want to be a lieutenant. I'm sorry, you're in a leadership position, and it's time for you to act.
It's time you to step up.
Yes, sir.
That's perfect. I like that. I feel like we've always been on the same page with that. And I want to thank you for taking time out of your day to speak with me about the concept of leading by example.
Yes, sir.
I also want to encourage our listeners to visit the Valor website, www.valorforblue.org, for more information about not only this topic, but other officer safety and wellness topics that we have there. And I want to say, please stay safe and stay healthy out there. Thank you, everybody.
The Valor Program is dedicated to delivering training, developing resources, and conducting research to improve the safety and wellness of law enforcement professionals across the country. For additional information regarding the Valor Program, please visit valorforblue.org, download the app on the Apple or Google Play Store, or follow us on Facebook and Twitter. The Bureau of Justice Assistance, BJA, in the Office of Justice Programs, U.S. Department of Justice, is committed to making our nation's communities safer through resources, developing programs, and providing grant funding opportunities to support state, local, and tribal criminal justice efforts. All are available at no cost. Please visit www.bja.gov to learn more.